What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that went straight from the tunnel at Swansea to get a packet of hobnobs from the 24-hour garage. Coming up, Ramsey no longer up West Brom Street, Snoop at Swansea, nothing but a draw thing, and Shrewsbury's temporary heart transplant, powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And it's weird to be with you on a Wednesday, but it's a wonderful one. The sun is shining, certainly where I am, at least, and maybe spring is on its way. We got a full house back with us today. Sam Parkin, back from a break. How are you feeling? Refreshed? Ready to go?
I don't know about refreshed today, but yeah, I had a great time away. It was nice to switch off. Went to Ireland with one of my boys, bit of golf, plenty of Guinness. Tremendous. Even got some blue skies as well. So yeah, it was much needed.
Good stuff. Both Sam and Adrian Clarke are on midweek duty this week. How are you doing, Clarkey?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm your Leicester City correspondent this week. Worked on two of their games, and I know loads of Leicester fans. And they were all texting me during the game, "Is that you? Is that you?" And I didn't get any abuse. Didn't get slaughtered. So I'll take that as a win.
All right. Well, that was not the big story from Tuesday night. You've probably seen this, listener, because it's been all over social media for the last 24 hours. Snoop Dogg, a minority investor at Swansea City, attended his first match in South Wales on Tuesday night. It was a 1-1 draw against Preston. This is what Paul Heckingbottom made of it.
"Just the smell of weed in the tunnel is the only thing that we realised something different."
Well, that really got some traction, as did the pre-match footage of Snoop walking around the pitch side, which is kind of the point, I guess. So good luck to them. And Tim, you got a favourite Snoop Dogg song, Clarkie?
You know what? I was reading about how he'd performed a full hour private set at the O Vodka HQ in the city prior to that gig for 400 invited guests. It said that he performed back-to-back classics. I don't think I could name a single one. Like, I'm sure I've heard them and I don't hate them, but I don't know the name of any Snoop Dogg song. And that probably is a bad reflection on me, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're of that generation. It'd be murder was the case for me if you to push me. You mentioned O Vodka, though. Sam, do you remember the story about the founder of O Vodka?
I don't know, but I had a little hip-hop phase. I was more kind of Cypress Hill, House of Pain, probably just going along with the crowd, to be honest. But the best was just whatever it was called. Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Not bad, that.
Drop it like it's hot. He was on that
before. Oh, drop it. I do know that one.
Well,
yeah,
say more recently, Noughties. I was a fan, definitely late 90s.
What astonished me was A, the size of the crowd. So like they've come out really in numbers to see him, and then it was like 15 minutes before the kickoff and it's absolutely rammed and everyone is actually waving the towel as he asked for. I thought, you know, in the UK we're a bit like, we don't want to be forced into doing stuff like that, but the Swansea fans all over it.
Different in South Wales. I went to see Snoop Dogg once and he had to leave the stage because somebody threw a bottle at him. Thanks, Nottingham. Just to wrap that up, by the way, speaking of bottles, O Vodka, the chap who set that up, Charlie Morgan, company now worth 150 million quid, he was the ball boy who Eden Hazard kicked through in the 2013 League Cup semi-final. He was more of a ball man. But anyway, annoying.
I did know that. So I was fully concentrating on trying to remember a Snoop Dogg song. It's nice they bought into it though, isn't it? And also, there's not many times I think, I'd like to be back in the dressing room, but I would have loved to have been a Swansea player last night and heard what his address was post-match. I'd have paid good money to have been in there in my towel with my shower gel in my hand, just wanting to get off, and all of a sudden Snoop Dogg comes in. I would have been listening to every word.
You might have needed a designated driver after that one.
I'd have given him a lift back to the Marriott. I'd have given him a lift back to the Marriott, no problem. And I'd have flipped him.
Elsewhere, not quite as headline grabbing on Tuesday night, but Joe Hart as keeper coach for Shrewsbury on a one-off basis for the win at Salford. They haven't appointed one permanently yet since the change of manager. Gavin Cowan and he are pals, hence why he stepped in on a one-off basis. I hope he doesn't take it permanently, Clarkie, because I think he's a really good pundit.
He's good. Yeah, he comes across all right, doesn't he? And I think he's quite a nice lad. You know, he doesn't seem big time, Joe Hart, and the fact that he's sort of willing, I'm sure they're not paying him anything, they'd just go back in and help out. I like that. Warming up the keepers. He'll know Dave Edwards, I'm sure. Just a quick word on Shrewsbury, by the way. 5 wins from 5. The new manager, Gavin Cowan, is, well, he's kind of saved them, hasn't he? Because they were heading towards the drop, weren't they? So, yeah. But yeah, I doubt Joe Hart will stay permanently.
Well, they were away at Salford. He probably still lives in Manchester, doesn't he? So it was a nice, nice local one for him. But yeah, good to see him back in Salopian colours. Right, before we get on to the big news breaking in the last 24 hours, let me remind you that our partners Quinbet have an offer for you. You can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, it's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Now then, West Brom have sacked Eric Ramsey after just 9 games in charge. He didn't win any of them. He leaves the Baggies just a point above the Championship relegation zone. Appointed on a 2.5-year deal on the 11th of January following the departure of Ryan Mason, Tuesday's 1-1 draw with Charlton proved to be his last match. A club statement said, West Bromwich Albion have parted company with men's first team head coach Eric Ramsey. Assistant coach Dennis Lawrence also departs the Hawthorns. First team coach James Morrison will oversee first team affairs on an interim basis. Again, Sam, always looked like a bad appointment. Their second bad appointment of the season, as it turns out.
Yeah, I got a bit of sympathy for him this morning, I think. Yeah, I don't think he's completely to blame. Went with a rookie last summer in Ryan Mason, and they've made the same mistake again, in my opinion. 9 games isn't enough to give anyone an opportunity to show fully what they can do. But yeah, I mean, he shored them up defensively. Absolutely. They've been pretty watertight in the last few weeks. He obviously ripped up his plan that he had coming into the country to play the back three, and that lasted 4 games, I think. So I think he recognised that wasn't going to work with the personnel that he had. So he did change that, but they just sorely lacked creativity under him and the ability to score goals, which is ultimately cost him his job. I would say, though, however, I just looked at Charlton last night, 3 shots, just the one on the target, the same that they mustered at Southampton in that 1-1 draw at the weekend.
Two points, yeah.
And have got away with a couple. I think they played all right at the weekend, but they didn't play well last night. I had a reporter in my ear coming down the line from the Hawthorns last night, and it sounded like West Brom actually played really well last night. Well, they played okay. They created enough chances to win the game. So his job has not been saved by a much better performance last night. But yeah, it had to happen, really, didn't it? Having not won in 9 games. We'll see where they go now. Pulis, Allardyce, sound the klaxon.
Sean Dyche for me.
He won't take a Championship job.
He's not getting another Premier League job, trust me. I've watched his football, no chance.
Absolutely. I had this chat with a few of our colleagues at Chelsea the other day, Matt, and they were suggesting right now probably not, but in time another Premier League team will call for Sean Dyche a bit further down the line. I was more in your camp, but I got a little bit persuaded by them maybe that he probably got one more in him. I don't think he takes the West Brom job now. What's he got a game from that?
Yeah, that's true. Well, James Morrison, Clarkie, just looking at the odds, he's the favourite at the moment, the interim. I mean, that's a massive, massive risk, is it? You told me before we switched the mics on that the supporters want Slaven Bilic back. Again, quite a while since he's worked. I mean, he was sacked by left El Fata in August 2024, further back than that he's worked in England. Russell Martin also in there. You're not getting Russell Martin and that massive style change to try and keep you in the Championship, are they? They are in a right pickle here.
Yeah, undoubtedly. They have to appoint someone older. It's as simple as that. I mean, they've gone with 2 young'uns in their 30s, and it's a risk too far. It's backfired. They need a stabilising influence. I understand why the fans might be longing for a Bilic or Mowbray or one of these old guys that have done well before. It's the only thing I can see, really. I think it's probably too big an ask for Morrison, isn't it? But isn't that just another inexperienced manager being asked to, you know, save the club? You know, they're in dire straits. We'll get to Leicester shortly, but Leicester aren't playing badly, actually. For me, West Brom are maybe the most likely at the moment. Even though that was a much improved performance against Charlton. I'm with Sam. That's harsh on Ramsey in so many ways. And I feel like it's really damaged his reputation. He'll forever be remembered for that short tenure, unfortunately. So, I mean, who else is going to employ him in the UK? I just don't think it's going to happen. Not for a long time. So, yeah, my sympathies are with him at the moment.
Bring back Pepe Mel. That's what I say.
He got 17 games, didn't he? I think.
It does make me laugh, the people who put these odds together. Gareth Southgate at 33-1. Yeah, okay, fine. Right, we're going to continue our champ chat in just under 5 seconds. Okay, Sam was on duty for Southampton's five-star show against QPR at St Mary's on Tuesday. I only saw the highlights of this, Sam, but it looked as one-sided as the scoreline and the stats suggested.
Second half, absolutely. Chasing in night for everyone of a QPR persuasion it became. But for half an hour, 35 minutes in the first half, they were in the game. It was ugly. They disrupted Southampton. It was a bit stop-start. They looked a threat QPR from set pieces. It was the only way I really felt they were going to score from a second ball. And they had one or two opportunities with the ball ricocheting around the box. But they were 1-0 down by that point. Finazaz afforded far too much space. I'll come on to Southampton in a minute to open the scoring. And the second goal was the killer. Matsuki from a corner kick, which if you hadn't seen, I mean, it's a terrible goalkeeping mistake from Joe Walsh, who last time I watched him, I gave man of the match on a Friday night at Charlton. This couldn't have been more contrasting. I think that he was maybe at fault for three of the goals, if not four. And I think we're a bit loath, aren't we, to go too heavy on goalkeepers, but criticism. But even me last night sat there, I'd be disappointed if that was my goalkeeper, if I was out there letting in four of those goals. So it was a real problem. Southampton, I loved watching. I love the right-hand side. Brian Matsuki, if you haven't seen those two in tandem, he doesn't always play Matsuki, granted, because that's where Fellows plays. But those two are really nice interchanging positions. Brie goes as the right-sided 10 quite often. Matsuki pulls wide, doesn't neglect his defensive work, Matsuki. It reminded me a bit of like Ashley Cole and Wayne Bridge when you got them in the same side, because they've got that defensive nous and they understand how to fill in for one another. So that's a nice facet of their game. They actually really reminded me of Chelsea in build-up. You got the back three with Manning tucking round, you got Downs as your Caicedo, and then you got that line of three tens from right to left, Brie, Azaz, Yanda, and then you got Cienza and Matsuki as your wide players, and then Larin last night as your centre forward. So there's loads of movement, loads of rotation, which caused QPR mass problems, and QPR so depleted by injuries. This is the caveat. It's a youth team out there, in essence. If you look at the bench, the players that are coming on, going 4-4-2 away from home against Southampton, I understand it, because the necessity is great to get the maximum points off the back of the whole win. But I think there comes a time when he had to declare last night, and they were getting absolutely destroyed in the middle of the pitch. With that rotation, with that quality, he ended the game, Julian Stefan, with Daniel Benny, who's a young Australian lad. He's been doing really well, actually scored his first goal for QPR at the weekend at Hull. And Kieran Morgan, who's a lovely footballer, but he's a midfield player who's played right back. That was the front two. Morgan dropping in a little bit towards the tail end. He'd declared by then, taking Kone off, and they'd lost Madsen to injury, who's probably been QPR's best player across the last 2 or 3 months. So it was a really painful evening for more than one way. And they need to beat Sheffield United now to stay kind of on the outskirts in the hunt.
They're not getting in the playoffs, Sam. They're not.
But my sentiment before the game yesterday was neither of them are. And obviously Southampton win handsomely. A few teams drop points. Southampton go to Sheffield Wednesday now at the weekend, where you'd expect them to win handsomely, and they're going to be right there. So it can change, but a lot of the conversation I was having with people before the game was, despite only being 4 points off it, a lot needs to happen with 13 games to go. There's a lot of traffic, and it kind of means you need to win two more games than everyone else who's in that tussle. QPR aren't going to do that. And final thing, Burrell out, Smith out, Dembele out, Poku out, Chair out. That's five players. That's four players with pace. And that's Ilias Chair, who's QPR's best player, or has been QPR's best player when he's on it. So going away to Southampton, zero pace, zero creativity, even at 0-0. I just don't know how QPR are going to score in that game last night. So big few days on the training ground to finish the season, to give the support some optimism going into next campaign. Southampton, outside chance.
Yeah, Tonder Eckert was on the endangered list when I did their FA Cup game at Doncaster.
I mean, he's
last
about
month.
6'4", that fella.
Yeah, stoic
on camera,
as well.
On camera, doesn't even look 6 foot. Optical illusion going on there.
Yeah, and he looks quite mean as well, I think, which is good for somebody who used to be the under 21 coach. Let's move on to Leicester. Adrian, you were covering there, 1-1 draw at Middlesbrough on Tuesday. Before that, he did the draw at Stoke. So that's two decent points on the road for Gary Rowett to start with. I think West Brom will be kicking themselves, won't they? That they could have had the next three, Norwich, Ipswich and Bristol City. They haven't won a league game since the 5th of Jan, but I'm thinking that they've got more than enough to stay up at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. In the first half at Stoke on Saturday, Leicester were abysmal. They didn't try. There was no application. There was no confidence. They couldn't pass the ball. They looked an absolute mess. In the second half, after Gary Rowett got stuck into them, they looked a good team. And they were really unlucky not to win that game. They ended up drawing it 2-2. They found some fight. And then they go to Middlesbrough last night. And they're excellent for most of that game. Yeah, of course they were put under pressure at various moments. But the discipline of the team, the endeavour, the application, the attitude was on a different level to what it's been for much of this season. Players were working really hard for each other. And they absolutely deserved to get at least a point from that game. The standout player that I wanted to talk about is Divine Mukasa on loan from Manchester City. He's only 18, plays at 10. Whoa, he's quality. He's absolute class. You know, 18 to come into the Championship, a difficult situation. It's not an easy loan for him, but he's already scored twice. He's now made three assists in three starts. He looks...
Are you going to call it divine intervention to keep Leicester up? I mean, it's right there. You've got to tap it in.
Well, let's see if he can do that. But he's a sort of player that looks like he's got all the time in the world. He's never in a hurry. He's got a very good left foot and he's got creativity. He's got a good shot on him. He just looks to have it all. So Mukasa looks to me to be a fabulous loan signing for them. Skip and Winks were magnificent at the Riverside. They grafted really, really hard.
Winked straight back into the team under Rowett then after being frozen out business.
Straight in, scored at Stoke, was excellent. It barely gave the ball away last night. And you know, even that ragged defence of theirs looked decent last night. You know, Nelson in particular stood out. So I think Leicester, there's a lot of room for optimism now. Fatawu was back off the bench, looked good. So yeah, if they continue to play with that attitude and application, I think they will be just fine. They looked almost the equals of Middlesbrough last night, which is some compliment. The one negative is Mavididi. The last two games, his body language is so bad and his decision-making around the box was really poor. So it wouldn't surprise me if he loses his place under Gary Rowett and they bring someone else in on the left.
All right, well, we shall see about that. We're going to stay with you, Clarkie, because you're going to tell us about the Friday night fixture. It goes down at Ashton Gate. Watford visit Bristol City. You're going to witness this one live. The last time you were there, the Robins were dismantled by Derby. They've only lost one of four since. Big win at Blackburn midweek. Struber saying this could be a really important week. This could be a tipping point for us. We're really, really happy. You can see why.
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, I think it's quite a lucky win at Blackburn Rovers. I mean, they're decimated by injuries. Bristol City, a lot of their defenders were out. Dickie's out. Atkinson had to come off. They obviously lost Zach Viner in January. So they're a bit depleted. Williams is out as well from midfield. So, and look, the XG and the chances tell you that Rovers were really unfortunate not to win. I think the goalie was great, Radek Vitek, in this particular game. But yeah, well, let's see if they can... I think it's a good game. I mean, maybe the winner has a chance of playoffs. I still don't. I put Bristol City kind of in the QPR camp, as in highly unlikely to make the playoffs personally. Watford, probably a similar boat. I think me and Sam are both at this game. You working on it, Sam? Yeah, he is. So that'd be interesting. I think we'll be seats apart because I think the Sky guys are in the press box these days because it's too high at Ashton Gate. They don't like it on the back row. I think there's a few new faces. Tommy Horvat has come in. He's Mehmeti's replacement, a Slovenian international. I think he started really well. He looks bright and busy and creative in a sort of 10 role, maybe just to the right of the centre as well. And they had a new defender in, the Swede, Noah Ely, last night. So he's a ball playing centre back. So yeah, a couple of new faces. As for Watford, they'll be disappointed, won't they, to have lost to Ipswich, but I don't think there's any shame in it. I think by and large it's been a pretty good start for Ed Steele. Good draw at Preston, magnificent second half, beat an informed Derby, who are the sort of away day specialists. And then in this game, they were poor in the first half, but he changed it. And he sort of inspired them in the second period. And they were basically knocking on the door. They missed a penalty. They were kind of all over Ipswich for much of the second half in midweek. So they can take a lot of heart from that. They'll be missing Marmar and Barr. So that's a little bit of a blow for them on Friday night. And they don't have a good away record, Watford, which plays into Bristol City's hands.
Not at Ashton Gate, right? They got smacked there in the cup last month.
Of course they did. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Only three away wins all season, and they came in November and December. So the start of this season and since Christmas, pretty poor. I just wanted to shout out Imran Loser. I know when we talk Watford, he always gets a mention, but he deserves it as this all-action midfielder. He has had the most shots by far up for Watford. He's got the highest expected goals for Watford. He's made the most passes by far. He's made the most chances by far, almost, I think, double the closest player. And he's also made the most ball recoveries of anyone in that team as well. So with and without the ball, Imran Loser is the kind of the guy that makes Watford tick. So yeah, I think it'll be a good game. I think both teams might score in this. And I'd actually give Watford a chance, but that's maybe the fact that I saw them get thumped by five last time I was down there.
All right, we shall see. Elsewhere, big game affecting both ends of the table at Fratton Park. Portsmouth entertain Hull City. Contrasting fortunes for the pair on Tuesday. Pompey lost at Wrexham. Hull beat Derby. Sam, I was going to challenge you to say something about Pompey that isn't their home form will be key, but then before that Wrexham game, they went on the road at Charlton and Millwall, so maybe that's lessened the burden on picking up points at home.
Absolutely has, yeah. I think just two away victories until the last fortnight, so 6 points out of nine from three incredibly challenging games. I didn't expect them to go to Millwall and repeat what they'd done at Charlton. So that was a special result for them and for the supporters, I'm sure, coming to London. That would have been a good atmosphere, but couldn't do it on the road in the week. Didn't look like there was a lot in the game. They didn't start particularly well. And the old Achilles heel, set piece defending, reared its ugly head once more. It was a combination of Cleworth and Ebu Adams with the touch to take it in for the second, I think it was, and didn't defend a ball in as lovely as it was from the left-hand side for Sam Smith's opener for Wrexham. So two poor goals, but made Wrexham sweat for it. And I think played well in the second half after the introduction of some substitute Segacic in the main. And I think Portsmouth's last few weeks kind of owes a lot to the work that they did in January. Ebu Adams has been sensational for them. I think Ali as well, and Caballero obviously is featuring heavily now. Paraguayan, I think, brought in from Santos off the right-hand side. So I think despite the business coming quite late, that's what's given them a fantastic opportunity of remaining in the division. I expect them to make changes for this. That was a team with no changes from the victory at Millwall that went up to North Wales last night. So I'd expect him to freshen things up ahead of the weekend. And Hull, very fortunate. I think I'm not seeing the entirety of the game, obviously, but let me just give you the XG, Clarkie, and I'll leave it there from last night's victory over Derby. 0.58, home side, scored four goals. Derby County, 3.27. And I watched the highlights and they spurned two or three really presentable chances. And the McBurney goal was a wonderful finish, and the Egan and the Kumas goals are half chances at best. Egan swivels, scores from around about the penalty spot, centre half, brilliant finish, and Kumas goes in, has to take it first time, probably around about the edge of the box, smashes it in the bottom corner. Yeah, so their finishing was sensational. Hull are giving up opportunities again. I questioned as to whether the manager had maybe just got wise to the Championship and shored things up, conceded 13 across the last four in all competitions, obviously shipped a few to Chelsea, conceding loads of chances. Go back a little bit further, 1.64 the XG at home to QPR, 1.94 the XG conceded at home to Bristol City in that defeat. So shipping opportunities, having to rely on Pandor to make saves last night, and I think that's been a bit of a feature of the season. He's not perfect, the goalkeeper, but he does bail them out, and they get away with it because they've got a good midfield, solid, and they've got McBurney, and they've got Gelhart having probably his best spell in the EFL. They've got Joseph. They've got front players really informed that are hardworking and will cause Portsmouth a problem at the weekend. I expect Portsmouth probably to have the ball here. I think Hull are certainly at home on their pitch. I know they're away this weekend, but they're quite direct against Derby. And I expect probably Lightning to strike twice there and Portsmouth probably to take it and try and be a little bit more technical and find that extra pass. But quite fancy goals in this one, given what I've just said about Hull and the problem that Portsmouth have defending balls in. I think physically they're strong, Hull City. So maybe goals at both ends, but really difficult one to call. Probably just side with the home side, maybe by the odd goal.
A whole decent on the road, won their last four and six of their last seven in the league.
Yeah, forget what I just said there. I forgot about that. Yeah, 1-6-7. Only drop points. 2-2 at Sheffield Wednesday.
Wow. I still don't think they're that great. But the points tally's excellent. I still think they're the ones that could drop out. But they score goals, they keep getting wins, don't they? And if you can get those three-pointers in the bag, it doesn't matter if you lose.
Yeah, them. I think the sentiment is that they've been conceding chances throughout the season and it's not married up with the amount of goals they've conceded or the results. And that it was going to level out and they were going to start losing games. But if you've got a potent strike force, then maybe they're going to be okay and last the distance. It's for me as well. I saw them against Chelsea recently and I was disappointed, and I kind of said that after the Charlton game in the FA Cup against Chelsea as well. I just want the Championship teams to give a good account of themselves and have a real go, and I don't think either team really did themselves fully justice, but they made multiple changes and that's the reality of where we are in the season and the prize available if you get promoted from the Championship.
They are 7 points clear of the playoff chasers at the time of recording. All right, we're going to head into League One next. There was a big win for Burton Albion on Tuesday. They saw off Stockport at the Pirelli Stadium Tyree Shades brace, one of which came via an inadvertent assist from county keeper Ben Hinchliffe, helping the Brewers ease their relegation fears. It's not quite comparable to what they did last season, Clarkie, is it, when they went on that mad tear? But they're 5 points clear of the relegation zone now, unbeaten in four, won two of those, only one defeat in six. So Gary Bowyer just seems to know how to get it done when the when the year turns from 2025 to 2026 in this case, or last season 24 to 25. You take my point. They're good in the second half of the season.
Yeah, definitely. They're not going down. I'm telling you, they're not going down, Burton. They're up to 17th now. Look who they've beat this year. They've beaten Bolton, Huddersfield and now Stockport at home. They won at Cardiff. They won at Bradford. You know, they're sort of an awkward team, aren't they, to play against. They always seem to find a way to score in games. They limited a really good Stockport side to just six attempts in the game. You know, that tells you plenty about that back five and how well organised it is. I did notice that 100 of their 301 passes in the 3-0 win against Stockport were long. So, you know, they will sort of not mess around with it. They'll get it forward to the front two who have got goals in them, haven't they? Beasley's got 12 now. Tyree Shade's got 8. You know, that if you can get your front two, you know, with that kind of output, you'll probably survive. Well done to Burton.
Yeah, the front two, Beasley seems to have been around for ages, always does a job. Tyree Shade, I remember seeing him at Swindon. He was a bit peripheral 4 or 5 seasons ago. I had to drop out, scored 14 for Eastleigh last year. So this is on 8 now, far and away his best goal scoring season in the EFL, which is a nice story and credit to him, because it doesn't happen that often, does it? When you drop out, it'll be, I would say, mid to late 20s now, hazard in a guess. Sometimes that's you, isn't it? If you drop out and you haven't done it, when you've been given an opportunity in League One, League Two, and always played wide in my recollection. So this is the first time he's been deployed right up there and he's doing the business. I would, different divisions, but I'd box them in with Shrewsbury. Burton, no way are they going to go down, I don't think. And Shrewsbury have pulled themselves well away from the mire in the bottom tier, and I think Gary Bowyer has done a tremendous job once more. Stockport haven't won away this year, 1 win in 6 away games. That's what they need to arrest if they're going to get one of those playoff spots tied up.
Would you describe, Matt, that mistake from Hinchcliffe as calamitous or no?
Yes, very good. Yeah. It means that they're 12 points off automatic promotion now, Stockport, so surely out of contention for it. While we're talking about teams who aren't going to go down, Doncaster, my pick for that particular bracket. On Saturday, they take on promotion chasing Cardiff City in Yorkshire. The Bluebirds look nailed on for a swift return to the Championship, despite last week's defeat. Rovers' prospects of being a League One concern next turn have taken a big boost in recent weeks. 3 wins in 4 then, Sam, for Donny. Back-to-back against Huddersfield and Rotherham. I knew they'd stay up.
Well, you were more confident than me, Matthew. But no, it's been a great few weeks for them. Four wins in six, I think, across six. Yeah. Only Cardiff and Lincoln more points. So it's been a brilliant little run, made even more sweeter by a couple of derby victories, but didn't come without a bit of pain. He made three changes at half time. Grant McCann in that victory over Rotherham, where they were completely abject in the first half. Just strengthened up the midfield, Clifton coming on, Middleton on the left hand side, and Hanlon up top for Billy Sharp. Hanlon scored, and those aforementioned players just helped to bolster midfield, where Robbie Gotts can get a little bit isolated. They've been playing with Lee and Owen Bailey, who's having an unbelievable season, but those two have the license to get forward and get goals. Bailey has been scoring freely, 11 goals for him this season. Again, far and away his best goal scoring season in the EFL. So ahead of a game against the league leaders, that's an area to keep an eye on, the midfield. And also if Grant McCann sticks with what finished so strongly the other day. Aside from Bailey, Molyneux, 8 goals, 7 assists again for him. 4 goals, 1 assist in his last 6. So those are the two players that you can rely on to get them goals. But they're a pretty good side, Doncaster. Functional, I think, when they get it right. And they played out a 7-goal thriller at Cardiff earlier in the season. Joel Bagan scored a late winner. So they caused them big problems. And I don't expect anything different here. There's been some high-scoring games at Doncaster and been involved in a 3-3 recently. Plymouth Argyle showed the blueprint the other day. I think if you have a go at Cardiff, you can maybe get a little bit of joy. But you got to defend well, because as Clarkie's going to tell us, Cardiff have got an array of attacking talent that can hurt anyone.
Yeah, they got 64 goals from their 33 games this season. Plymouth doing well, obviously, Clarkie, on the tear at the moment. And you sometimes get these games, don't you, with a team that seem to be just cruising their way to promotion, that they'll get a slap in the face and maybe a bit of a reality check, which I guess Doncaster will be wary of here. I mean, Cardiff, what, 69 points, 11 clear of Bolton in third. So what, they need, what, 4-5 wins, maybe? Mm. To secure it maximum? Is there any danger of complacency, do you think?
I don't think so. No, I think he can lock them in. Let's lock Cardiff and Lincoln in. I mean, I just don't think anyone beneath them is consistent enough to overtake them, is truth be told. I think they're both going to cruise to automatic promotion, which is great. But this is kind of a slightly dangerous game, as Sam was pointing out, because Donny will definitely look to replicate Plymouth's tactics. Their tactics were quite go direct and test the back four, be physical, the breakaways, obviously, because Cardiff are such a sort of attack-minded team. They'll throw bodies forward in a bid to sort of overwhelm teams. And they will leave themselves a bit short at the back. And you can break on them quite fast. Yeah, there's a bit of a blueprint there. I have said before this season that their defence can be bullied a little bit, Cardiff City. I think you can knock them around a bit. So that might be what Donny looked to do here. Cardiff, if they're a little bit suspect at the back, they will score goals. We know that. And it's interesting at the moment, obviously, with Salak out, Amari Kellyman, who you guys know about, has come in. And he's not a striker, is he? He's more of an attacking midfielder, isn't he? He's been doing a job in attack and playing very well, actually. Tanner's a good player, isn't he? He's very bright up and down the sides. Robertson's in good form in midfield. So yeah, I see goals here, big time. Cardiff have scored in each of their last 20 matches. They've scored in each of the last 10 away games, and they've scored at least twice in each of their last 4 away games. So, you know, if you stick Cardiff down for 2, Donny might have to score 3 to win this game. So, I see this being quite exciting.
Looking forward to that then. Yeah, Kellyman, 4-4 for him. Good to see him just getting some consistent minutes, because he's had a horrible time with his hamstrings over the last couple of years. In League 2, second against third at the Abbey Stadium, MK Dons going to Cambridge. What a tear Cambridge are on, Clark. The only league defeat since the end of October was weirdly at Harrogate, and they've only lost once at home all season, and that was way back in September against Oldham. So they're looking good to bounce back to League 1.
They are looking good, yeah. And it's like a triumphant... Well, it's not done yet, is it? Because they're so close up there. But it's feeling like it could be a triumphant sort of return for Neil Harris, who did walk out on them, didn't he, a few years ago to go back to Millwall. Look, it's the best defence in the division against the best attack. So that in itself is quite exciting. Who will come out on top? Cambridge have got some big home games to come. This is one. They've got Swindon at home. They've got Notts County at home. What I like about Neil Harris is that it's not just about a 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1. He's been flitting between a back three and a back four this season, and he's been flitting in recent games as well. They're not a team that relies on one striker either. They're all sort of chipping in with goals. Knight's got a few. Watts has got a few. Kai has got plenty as well. They're a good pressing team. I think that's part of the reason they've got such a good defensive record. They will graft, and they're really in the face of opponents, and they'll definitely do that against MK Dons. I think set pieces could be big in the match. MK have scored 19, which is the second most. Cambridge just scored 18. Only Bromley have got more. So both teams powerful in that regard. If you look at the defending set piece stats, it's Cambridge that are the strongest, and they've let in the fewest goals from corners and free kicks this season in League Two. So yeah, I think this will be a good quality game, and I give Cambridge a chance. I think Cambridge will end up in the top three. You know, you don't have a run like this unless you've got something about you. And I think Neil Harris has instilled a really, really strong team ethic, and it could fire them towards promotion.
Won't be easy though, Sam, will it, against a team who haven't lost since New Year's Day. Took Paul Warne a little while, didn't it, to get his feet under the table there. But he was praising the strength of his squad after the win at Walsall last time out. And that's going to be critical, isn't it? You know, some teams in League Two won't be able to weather it if they get a few injuries at this point of the season, but the Dons might be able to.
Yeah, that's what they've got above some other teams, unquestionably. No Callum Patterson, no Mendes Lang, no Aaron Collins. In the victory at Walsall. The knock-on effect was, I will get to it in a minute, but it was a bit of a strange setup system, but they got through. They profited from a Walsall mistake and scored from a dead ball and got the job done without too much fuss. Is it a good time to play them? Probably, with those three players missing, 25 goals, that's taken out of the team. I think it will be a fight. It'll be a scrap. Completely agree with Clarkey. It could be decided by a set piece. It was 1-1 at Stadium MK earlier in the season. I see it being very, very similar. But yeah, MK have got the squad, I think, to deal with it. They played kind of back three. Offered was the left back, but he tucked in to make himself a centre-half. Jones was supplying the width on the right, Gethin Jones, that is. Basically, didn't have any players on the left-hand side. Well, they did. They had loads of players on the left-hand side, but they didn't have a naturally left-sided player. So you had Mellish pulling over there, you had Gilby pulling over there, and you had Hepburn Murphy. So much so that 56% of their attacks in the victory at Walsall came down the left. So they essentially had five midfield players: Kelly, Crowley, Wiles, Gilby, Mellish. Bit of a box going on, but lopsided because Mellish was probably the one that was given the instruction to pull onto the left-hand side. So it was out of necessity, I would suggest. Paul Warne probably going with some good characters, some experienced guys who could do them a job when clearly they're really undercooked with so many of their front players and goal scorers missing. But they got the job done in an ugly game, and they'll always be a team to be reckoned with. But maybe Cambridge, without those aforementioned players, will fancy their chances. It's 3 from 5, isn't it? I said it on last week's podcast, and I don't think, in light of Salford and Walsall continuing to struggle, let me just get the league table up. Nothing's changed my mind in that regard with Crewe and Chesterfield and Barnet sneaking in there now, being the other teams in the mix. So I would be pretty astonished if not Bromley, Cambridge, Milton Keynes, Notts County, Swindon, 3 of those 5 get promoted automatically.
Yeah, very tight between them. 4 points between Bromley at the top and Swindon in fifth. Let's do some predictions, shall we? Great week for Sam in absentia as well. Last week, a 2-0 correct prediction for Mansfield v Lincoln, really boosting his score.
Good
up
pluck,
to 4
that.
Points.
Great pluck.
Great what pluck, yeah. I mean, he did. He had first dibs on all three, didn't he? It was, you know, the slight advantage, really, yeah, being remote.
There was some disgruntlement from Aiden.
I did listen, and like, yeah, Matt poured scorn on my prediction of Leicester winning at Stoke, and if it had ended a minute minute earlier, would have been bang on there as well, wouldn't I, Darcy?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
You're still 10 off me, mate. 53 to me, 43 to you.
A lot of football to be played.
There is.
Three points rises.
Matt, who was breathing down your neck, has sort of just let you off the hook, really. He's back on 34. So, yeah, we need some movement this week to make a bit of a contest of it.
All right. Well, in that spirit, I'm the one who needs to move the most. So I'm going to go first on Charlton against Wrexham. And I think that this is going to be a goal-laden game. And I think that Wrexham are going to win it by 3-2. How about that? Adrian, what do you think?
I've got 3-1 written down here to Wrexham. Yeah, Wrexham just always score goals. Charlton seem to score even if they haven't got much of the ball or they don't have many chances. Yeah, they'll try and stop Wrexham here, and I'm sure they'll have some good moments, but I don't know if they're quite good enough to stop the juggernaut that Phil Parkinson has sort of built at the minute.
Sam?
Yeah, I've got such a strong fancy for Wrexham, and ahead of tonight, maybe Birmingham. But it's just whether Hull or Millwall capitulate to the extent where both of those teams can get in the playoffs. But yeah, I agree with both of you. I think Charlton are going to stay up, but I think Wrexham will be too strong here. I will go racing to a 2-0 goal lead. Consolation. 2-1, Wrexham.
Okay, all going for the away win there. Clarkie, what do you think to Northampton, Peterborough?
I think it'd be pretty boring, to be honest. I mean, it's Northampton are on a rotten run, aren't they? It's not going well for the Cobblers, not scoring very many goals. Peterborough, a bit patchy. You know, they're much improved on earlier in the season, but they're not the finished article. I'm going to go, it's kind of a derby. It's not a derby. Northampton 1, Peterborough 1.
I was just looking on my phone while you were talking there because I thought, is this a derby?
It's a derby. I played in it. It's a derby. No, I've lost.
An hour and 2 minutes, door to door. An hour and 17.
It's clutching, isn't it? It's clutching big time.
Well, go strong rivalry.
Okay, fine.
You can't put local in there, can you? Because it's not local.
Well, it's 42 miles as the crow flies, as
they
say.
What's the region? Like, what is Northampton, Peterborough? What sort of derby is that?
Peterborough is Cambridgeshire, isn't it?
Yes.
And Notts is Northamptonshire, but yeah, don't know. East, slightly east.
East Anglian, kind of, yeah. Don't
go that far. What's going to happen, Sam?
It's at Northampton, yeah? Let's have a look. Peterborough came from, 3-1 behind, was it, to draw with Exeter? 2-1 Posh.
I was going to go with Posh as well, but I've got ground to make up here. Let's go for 0-0. And then Crewe against Tranmere. I'm going to go quite easy, 3-0 to Crewe here. Sam?
Yeah, Tranmere are having a Reggie Blinker, aren't they? three have you gone?
Yeah.
2-1, Crewe.
Wow. Adrian, full house for the Railwaymen?
Yeah, 2-0. 2-0.
I think I've gone 3-2-1s there, which is very, very weird.
I was just wondering if it should be railway men rather than railwomen. Doesn't sound quite right, does it? Anyway, before we get to our tweet of the week, let me remind you again of that offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus, and for new UK customers only, visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. If you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, 5 stars would be great. Thank you. All helps us grow the show. You'll know if you've been with us before that we finish with the tweet of the week. This one is pretty run of the mill. We'll be honest. It's Plymouth Argyle's Joe Edwards, the captain, quote tweeting the official account. You have a picture of him roaring in celebration with the home supporters after that big win at the weekend. They said our skip with a hand raised / clenched emoji. Load the call it a fist. It sort of is a fist. Joe says, what an atmosphere today. 3! Stars in the eyes emoji. Green heart emoji. No better place. Home emoji. Heart eyes emoji. He's gone big, Sam, on the emojis, which is good. He's fishing for compliments in the replies, and he's got loads of them as well. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It's not going to rock your world, but it's sort of what we're here for.
Short memory, you, Matthew. Short memory. I'm not going to have a go at my holiday-making friend. We holiday in the same town in Cornwall. He loves a crab sandwich. He loves a paddleboard. He loves fish and chips on the beach in the evening. He's not one to go looking for compliments. He's too long in the tooth for that. Top man, Joe Edwards. Lovely.
Like a fine wine, Uncle Joe, you get even better with age. Absolute legend, says one of the replies. And that was just what he was hoping for, I think, Clarkie.
Yeah, I read reports that he was absolutely magnificent in the game, that he was sort of winding back the clock. He was just superb. So I don't mind it at all. No better place. And then the sort of home emoji, quite like it. What shocks me, really shocks me to the core here, and I feel it's wrong, Matt, is that it's a full house. Everyone's still there behind the goal to salute him at the final whistle. So it's just after the final whistle has ended, and they're taking the nets up. I mean, come on, guys. Just wait a few minutes, yeah? Wait for the crowd to leave. No need to go that early by removing the nets. It kind of spoils the picture for me. So, yeah, a bit premature, I think, the ground staff there at Plymouth.
Maybe they wanted Joe to have an unimpeded view of the people who he was celebrating. Seems unlikely, but you never know. All right, that's where we're going to leave things for today. Back with you again next week. Enjoy the football. Until then, for now, though, from Adrian, from Sam, and from me, it's goodbye.